Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Drive on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. Tune in on game day to hear him 3 hours before kickoff and immediately following the final whistle. Here's the new pregame and postgame host for the Chiefs Radio Network.
Kansas City wins the game!
Joshua Briscoe.
Hey man, when did Joshua Briscoe get such a nice open? We don't have that nice of an open for me when I begin the show. Rob, what's going on here? What's happening here? Briscoe, did you know this? Did you have a hand in this? When did you get this intro?
I had no hand in it whatsoever. This was merely presented to me the first time, and I'm very happy to hear it. It gets me in the right headspace, makes me feel like the big shot that I aspire to one day be.
So I am struggling with this, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. I am happy the Chiefs won. They had no wins. Now they have one win. They got a chance to get back to 500, and ultimately that's all that matters. In the back of my mind, I am thinking that the Chiefs did a lot of the same things that caused them to lose to the Chargers and to the Eagles. They just didn't play a team that could take advantage of those mistakes the way that they did in weeks one and weeks two. Do you feel the same or different about what we saw in week three against the Giants?
I think I said it this way on a podcast yesterday, which was that I don't know that the Chiefs played better football in week three. They played a worse opponent in week three. And I don't think that's the end of the world, but long story short, yeah, I'm with you. And here's the thing about it. It's where, like, if you want to see the positive side of this, they lost very close games that landed on, you know, one mistake here, one mistake there, and lost to two good teams in the Chargers and Eagles in week one and two. So they were close, but not quite good enough to beat two good teams. And then they beat the Giants. The final score looks pretty good. It didn't feel good at halftime, but the second half, you get a little bit of distance there, you feel better. So I think they showed improvement in a few places. I think the secondary over these last 2 weeks has earned legitimate trust. What happened against the Chargers has been almost completely washed away for me now, but I think most of those offensive issues, yeah, I think most of the same problems are still there. They just got to do it against a worse team in week three, which is kind of funny. The Ravens are in a similar spot where they're also 1-2 with a win over the Browns and then losses to two good teams. So it's an interesting spot for two of these like legit AFC contenders.
Am I allowed to say let's pump the brakes a little bit on the secondary until we see them against a viable passing defense? Because I saw them go up against the Eagles, who are one of the bottom five passing teams in the league, and I saw them go up against a team that just fired their quarterback earlier today. So I'm with you. I've been very impressed by the secondary, and I think they've shown great growth since week one. I want to see what they look like against a team that I actually think can pass the football on Sunday.
No, I think that's okay. I'm giving them a lot of credit because there are really good receivers on these teams, but it doesn't mean that the quarterbacks had good games. I do think that's a fair note. We're like, look, they held A.J. Brown down. Devontae Smith had one play of consequence. Malik Nabers was invisible. Jalen Watson had, I think, half as many catches against Malik Nabers as Malik Nabers did. So I am still very optimistic about the individual performance of the corners, and it feels like all those miscommunications that they had against the Chargers, I think those still would have been taken advantage of by Hurts or Russ. But you're right to say that they've played really three teams, maybe just two teams, with really great outside weapons in the Giants and Eagles, but they've played one quarterback who's at the top of his game, and that was Herbert in week one, and he diced him. So I'm good with that. I'm still giving them total credit for what they did against the Eagles and Giants from a talent perspective, but I do think that's a fair note on the quarterbacking.
Yeah, the one thing I'll give them a lot of credit for is Noel Williams, that he is a guy that I think from day one has really stepped up, stepped in, and been a positive player for this team, and that's why I mentioned, like, The Ravens are one of those offenses that can beat you in a multitude of ways. You got one of the five best quarterbacks in the National Football League who we just saw throw for 300 yards on Monday Night Football. Historically, I know they haven't gotten off to the start that they usually do, but they got one of the five best rushing attacks. Like, this is an offense that is going to put a lot of pressure on this Chiefs defense. To let's see if they have taken those steps forward from week one against a team that really exploited them defensively.
Yeah, and I think it's also you're going to have to mix in the tight end position in a way that hasn't happened these last couple of weeks with no Goddard and not really a threat like that for the Giants. So I think that the holistic test is fascinating with what we saw the Lions do with some success against the Ravens, where I think you saw them holding their rush lanes to kind of corral Lamar. What is 7 sacks in that game? Like, absolutely crazy to see that. The problem is, even as the Lions, I think, showed, hey, you can hold your rush lanes and you can compress Lamar, and then you need to make the play of grabbing him by the foot and tripping him up before he takes off. I want to be optimistic about, like, Leo Chanel in a spy role. Like, I think he's going to have a really interesting role coming up this weekend. But ultimately, the Lions pass rush and those front four is in a much better spot than the Chiefs front four has been so far this year. So I don't think they're going to be able to just copy and paste what the Lions did, but I do think it's interesting to kind of see where the Chiefs defense has their strengths and weaknesses, where the Lions defense has their strengths and weaknesses, and how that's going to translate against the common opponent.
I don't want to use the term must win for this one, but it feels like a very important swing game for either one of these teams. One of these teams is going to be 500 heading into October. One of these teams is going to be 1-3, and they're going to have to spend most of October trying to dig themselves out of the hole that they have created. I would argue that this game is more important for the Chiefs than the Ravens, just because the Chiefs are in a far more difficult division than the Ravens are in. Sure, the Ravens have the Steelers to deal with, but Cincinnati doesn't have their starting quarterback, and the Browns might win 4 games this year. So I think if you're just going off of who needs this win more, who is this game more important for, I'm going to argue Kansas City over Baltimore.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there, and it's even kind of interesting the schedules these next 2 weeks are very similar, because after these games, they both the Chiefs and Ravens both get AFC South teams who are kind of just up in the air, and then good NFC teams. The Chiefs have the Lions and the Ravens have the Rams. But I think I'm with you. In particular, what a weird scheduling quirk for the Chargers to start with 3 AFC West games. The Chargers have literally, not an exaggeration, I don't mean figurative, they have literally had the best start you can have in terms of taking the lead in your division. They got every opponent in the division, beat them all, and they're alone at the top of a division at 3-0 against 3 1-2 teams below them. So I certainly think that the AFC West path is a murky one, and to your point, The Steelers are going to be about 500 because that's their God-given destiny, and I don't think the Bengals are going to be able to hold on without Burrow. So I think the Ravens have a pretty good path, not to the one seed, but to the top of their division. If the Chiefs win this game, we're going to be singing songs on Monday about how the season is back on track.
Yeah, I mean, if the Chiefs win this game, I would say most of the feelings that people have had about the Chiefs, I would say for the most part, kind of go away. Now, you're probably going to be a dog again against the Lions at home. The Lions are just, they're just an offense right now that is just firing on all cylinders. You got a road game against Jacksonville, which feels like a really difficult spot. But if this team can be 3-3 by the time they get Rashee Rice and by the time you get Xavier Worthy back, I think you should feel like in a good spot where, all right, we got our full complement of weapons. Let's start trying to pick up some momentum. Let's try to build some steam here and really start playing better football.
And that's the thing that makes this team both, like, dangerous and that's going to keep them interesting all the way through, is they could be 2-4 when Rice gets back. I mean, they could be 1-5. God, I hope they're not. But even if they are, you are looking then at the back half of the season and thinking, okay, well, let's say they get back at full strength and they do have the weaponry, and now you got Patrick Mahomes and the full plan from training camp, and that's, you know, assuming that Worthy looks like himself or some version of himself playing through the shoulder, that team could have fundamentally different problems. We're like, right now, I know that there are some people, especially nationally, who I really respect, who have kind of asked that question of, like, does Rashee Rice really fix this? And I still think he does, because one of the things this offense doesn't have is an easy button anywhere, and Rashee Rice is a walking easy button in this offense. So I do stay optimistic, but you have to have your head above water, and if you're 2-4 or 1-5 when he comes back, you're chasing for a wild card spot in an AFC that I think still might have room for the Chiefs, even in, like, a worst case scenario. But man, if they're able to beat the Ravens and Jags, and even if they lose to the Lions, like you said, if they're 3-3 after starting 0-2 this way, I would settle out of court for that in a heartbeat.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe. He is the pregame and postgame host on the Chiefs Radio Network. I want to go through some of the, quote, issues with the Chiefs and just get your opinion on them. I put my worry with Harrison Butker right now from somewhere between a 3 and a 4 right now with him. I'm not going to be overly concerned. I do think he's still trying to figure some things out. We had questions about him heading into the postseason. He didn't miss a kick in the postseason, so I'm not going to get too worried about a couple of missed kicks in September, but those kicks have ended up mattering. It mattered in week one against the Chargers. If he had made the kick against the Eagles, you probably don't need to go for the onside kick. So it has certainly affected the way that the Chiefs have played. The point that I've made is right now with the deficiencies that you have in your offense, you can't overcome everything. You can't overcome a penalty from Juwan Taylor and then a missed kick. Like, you got to clear up one of these two things while your offense isn't operating at full capacity. Where would you put your worry? Where would you put your concern right now for Harrison Butker?
I think I'm probably a little higher than you, probably around like a 6 or so. And the thing for me that's kind of just stressful is that for so many years, Harrison Butker has been automatic. He's been 3 points, or certainly. He had the weird stretch around the injury and everything where some of the shorter kicks were problems. But when he's been healthy, he's been automatic points. He jogs out there, he hits a kick, he jogs off. Everybody's happy. And a bunch of those moments obviously happen in the biggest moments on the biggest stages. So he's absolutely earned that reputation as just being a sniper, as a kicker with a huge leg. Well, now the league's getting a little bit stronger. Tobe talked about this a week or two ago and saying that some of these younger kickers are coming in with just as big of legs. And now everybody's working the kicking balls. And so the kicking range is extending. All that to say, right now, this doesn't mean this is how the rest of his season's going to go, but right now, Harrison Butker has...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Has been automatic. Right now, he is, unfortunately, a kicker. That's just where we're at right now. He's the feeling that most teams have, most fan bases have, college, NFL, UFL. Your kicker runs out there, you're a little bit nervous because you go, man, all right, this should be 3 points. Either we're going to salvage a drive that should have been better, or we really need these 3 points. I have that nervousness in the pit of your stomach. Because kicking the ball is weird. It's a hard thing to do. These guys are so good at it that it feels easy when they don't make mistakes, when they don't have misses. But right now, when Butker jogs out there, I'm going to be a tiny bit nervous until he gets back into his groove. I think there's every chance he does get back into his groove. I want to see him just go make 5 kicks in a row over a couple of games, and then I'll be able to bring that rating back down a little bit.
I'm sure you were there when this happened, but Matt Nagy talked about accountability for Juwan Taylor and how the penalties had to stop and how he couldn't keep creating these negative plays. He has had 3 penalties since these words were spoken. Do you think they're doing anything with Juwan Taylor, or is accountability just one of these things that are just nice buzzwords to hear from coaches, yet there's going to be no actions about this?
Well, I do think that the coach speak of it all is a fair thing to call out. I mean, it's been years now that you've heard, we got to clean up the penalties. You know, we can't have that. We got to be better. And you can say that, and the coaches can mean it, but then how do you actually dictate that? The interesting thing now, look, last year we had penalty problems from Juwan Taylor, and no one was really arguing for him to be benched because the backup right tackle was your left tackle, and you're trying to get Wanya Morris to maybe stop the bleeding on the left side. This year is such a different situation. They paid Jalen Moore because, as far as we can tell, they were comfortable with the idea of Jalen Moore being the starting left tackle protecting Patrick Mahomes' blindside week 1. So that guy is available now. I'm not surprised that they want to give Juwan Taylor a little bit more time. I wonder if Moore getting in weirdly at left tackle at the end of the game on Sunday, if that has anything to do with anything. That's still very strange to me. Doesn't quite pass the sniff test. But I do think that if there is a if there is a sequence, not an individual penalty, but I think if Juwan Taylor has one of those sequences where it's a couple of penalties on the same drive, or it's a couple penalties and a bad rep, that maybe that's enough where Jalen Moore takes over at that point. We saw him do that once in Jacksonville, I guess. So I think that's gotta be on the table. The strange thing is now, though, again, like, is Jalen Moore a better football player right now, even without the penalties? Maybe, right? The Chiefs seem to think so, because he was plan A at left tackle. So it really is kind of odd. I do think the question of accountability should be held up right now, because the Chiefs do have options. You're not talking about the situation they were in last year.
Last thing I guess I want to get from you in this vein is talking about the issue between Andy Reid and Travis Kelce. I don't know if issue is the correct term to use there, but I mean, there was only one incident this week in the National Football League where a head coach and their player had a chest bump on the field. Is this something that you were monitoring? Is this just two guys being competitive? What do you kind of make of what happened on Sunday?
I think it answers a question you asked on socials a couple of weeks ago, which is who holds Travis Kelce accountable? When he's in Juwan Taylor's ear, who's back there for Travis Kelce? And I think there are two guys who can reasonably do that. It's Patrick Mahomes, who isn't doing it that way, and it's Andy Reid, who we've seen have match Kelce's intensity on the sidelines a few times there now. So I don't even think it's weird, frankly, because we've seen Kelce do it so many times. We've seen him play really hot and emotional. We've seen him in years past do that on the field in a way that moves them back 15 yards, throwing a towel or whatever. So I think it's interesting. I think it's worth keeping an eye on, just as, you know, Kelce hasn't said this definitively, but we're all kind of thinking there's a good chance this is the last dance for him, right? I think Kelsey's thinking about the urgency of, I might have one more shot at this. Andy Reid is aware of the fact that this is not the way this team wanted to start. The offense isn't moving the way they want it to, and both of them want the same thing, which is for more production offensively. And even Andy mentioned in postgame, something he's mentioned now, I think every game this year, an energy level issue. He talked about it a ton after Brazil. I think he said it was better against Philly, but then talked about, hey, yeah, you know, that second quarter, the energy was bad. They came out the first half not fast enough after talking about getting off the fast starts most of this season now. So I don't think Andy Reid's losing any sleep about it. I don't really think we should either. I think it's kind of interesting. I think it's an interesting snapshot of that relationship, but it seems very, very much in character of who both of those guys have been through their entire football lives.
Yeah, I guess to me, and I know this is an extreme example, but you remember the video. Do you remember the video where Draymond punched Jordan Poole? And like, if you go back and watch it, it's like none of the other players around it are even responding to it, because it was kind of the, oh, here's Draymond. Like, Draymond does this during practice. Like, I keep hearing, man, this is what leadership looks like. It's not like any of the players really seem to be responding to Kelce when he's doing this. Like, the attitude is just like, hey, this is what Travis does every once in a while. Like, Travis kind of does this, and he yells and he screams, and then we just, everybody goes on about their business. Like, I just don't know if it's having that kind of effect that he thinks that it's having of getting his guys fired up. No one seems to be fired up by this.
Oh, yeah. I don't necessarily think that was a decision from Kelce. I think that was very legitimate. The thing that I kind of think is funny is to put yourself, I'm just picking a rookie on offense here. I have no idea where Breshard Smith was during this, but imagine being Breshard Smith just standing like 10 feet away from that interaction and watching Andy Reid put his shoulder into Travis Kelce and give the business back. Now I'm a seventh round rookie running back looking around going, all right, well, I'm not going to be the guy that makes Andy Reid mad at the next thing. Like, this is a good moment for all of us to refocus in on what our job is here, because we are running hot. Like, there is an intensity here where, again, even Kelce has talked about Andy Reid's usual, like, negative feedback is a mustache twitch. When he meets that energy level that highly, I think that has an impact on the sidelines. But I do think with Kelce, it's just kind of how he handles that, for better or worse.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe here for a couple more minutes, just getting his thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs and them starting 1-2 on the season. We mentioned it just a little bit. It is interesting how these two teams are in the exact same place kind of heading into this game. I think it's a really, really intriguing matchup. We led the show with this earlier today. Is I wonder if it's ever going to happen for Baltimore. They have lost two heartbreaking games so far this season to two Super Bowl contending teams. Lamar Jackson is 1-5 against Patrick Mahomes. They've never beaten Kansas City in the postseason. They've never beaten Buffalo in the postseason. They have been as good of a regular season team that you can be, but it always feels like there's something missing. And I'm starting to wonder if Baltimore is ever going to be able to put everything together all at one time to get over that hump.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question I think you like have to ask reasonably as we all look around and everyone acknowledges how good this football team is. And not even on paper, because that kind of becomes like a pejorative. Like, oh, they're so good on paper. The Baltimore Ravens have been a great football team for a while now. But like you said, there end up being all of these postseason moments all eventually end the same way. And right now, maybe it's really early in the season. But like, if Derrick Henry just has a fumbling problem now, that's the thing that costs you in two big games against two other Super Bowl contenders. If you're losing to Super Bowl contenders in September, I don't know why I'm supposed to believe that that's going to go differently in January. I just, like I think most people, I don't feel confident that I can tell you why the Ravens are the way that they are. But at some point, I don't want to evaluate guys exclusively by rings or playoff wins or whatever, because I think a lot of times you can miss greatness by being too focused on that. But when that's the thing missing from your resume, performances in big games like that, the questions are genuine. The being able to circle that and say, hey, why do you have these MVPs, these regular season records, all these stats, all these accolades? And it's not just a Lamar problem. Again, if Derrick Henry doesn't fumble the ball, maybe they're 3-0, and that's the margin of error in the NFL. You have no room for the mistakes that, again, just looking in the mirror here, that Travis Kelce and Derrick Henry may have cost their teams a 3-0 record, trading in for a 1-2 record, and those are two future Hall of Famers that are going to have to be better for the rest of their team's regular seasons. It's fascinating to me.
I'll get you out of here with this last one. Do you have Ariba McIntyre? Because I was a big fan of Martha Stewart. I have now switched from Martha Stewart to Ariba McIntyre after seeing her in the commercial for The Voice. Do you have Ariba McIntyre? Is there somebody in this same vein for you?
Please ask Nate Taylor about Martha Stewart the next time you talk to him on the radio. I don't know if I have an answer for that for you. I would give you one if I could think of it. It took me a second to put the question together, and then you said Martha Stewart, and I just thought, I need you to ask Nate Taylor about Martha Stewart, and that's the best thing I can give you today, Carrington. That's the best thing I'm going to tell you, is just follow up with Nate on that later on.
Okay, you know what? I would also like to throw somebody else, Aunt May from Spider-Man, Marissa Tomei. I'll throw her in there. She's 60 years old. She's going to be 61 in December. Can I throw Marissa Tomei? She might be in that Ariba McIntyre class for me, too. Hall of Famer.
Reba's 70. I think we're looking at different recruiting classes here.
Okay, no, that's fair. That's why I'm asking. That's why I wanted to know your opinion. If you had a Reba, if you had a Marissa Tomei.
Martha Stewart is 84. We're working another. I believe she's older than the last two American presidents.
She doesn't she doesn't look a day over 50.
No, listen, again, this is a great conversation for you to have with Nate sometime, and he's going to get himself in trouble. That's all I can tell you.
Okay, all right. That is our guy, Joshua Briscoe, joining us on the show today. Briscoe, man, I appreciate you, bro.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. Somebody said Carrie Underwood. We're not doing this. Carrie Underwood is 42 years old. We're not doing this. We're not putting her in the Marissa Tomei, Ariba McIntyre, Martha Stewart category.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.